Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Now, Mutt at Night on WEEI.
All right, welcome in. Brian Barrett with you up until 11 o'clock. The number is 617-779-7937. Before I go on, Nick, who is producing tonight, you're better with social media than me, so I got to ask you this question. What is going on like Twitter now where I see it's about movies and they say like the real movie hero and like the fake movie hero or the real
movie villain and the fake
Yeah,
movie
what the
villain?
Hell is that?
I don't know. Just another meme that people make up because they're bored.
Yeah, it's weird, man. I can't follow these whatsoever. It's like they just did one for the movie that Brad Pitt was in with Leonardo DiCaprio. Well, it was a good movie. What the hell was the name of it? And they have like the dog in the movie and Brad Pitt. It's when Brad Pitt plays like Leonardo DiCaprio's stuntman. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, I don't get what these Twitter memes mean. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. But by the way, do you agree with me on the 2008 Celtics or no, that they've kind of gotten annoying ever since they won a championship? Like, they were so fun to watch. And by the way, I still contend that they would have won the 2009 championship if Kevin Garnett didn't go down with the knee injury. And Garnett was never the same guy after that. So you really got a year and a half of elite Kevin Garnett, and then he was never the same guy again. But, man, all this Ray Allen crap, it feels like they think they're the Patriots. Like, they were a dynasty or something. They won one championship.
I'll never hate Paul and KG, but the rest of them kind of done with it.
Yeah, Perk's making a name for himself in the media. He's definitely making a name for himself in the media. He does not like a lot of guys like Steph Curry for some reason. I don't know what it is about Steph Curry. Maybe it's because he played with LeBron, but he is not a fan of Steph Curry. He always goes out of his way to criticize Steph Curry.
No, he hates Kyrie.
Oh, well, yeah. Him and Kyrie, they do not like each other whatsoever. Brian Barrett with you up until 11 o'clock. I did want to get to this, so the Red Sox had an intra-squad scrimmage today for the second consecutive day, and they pumped in crowd noise. It didn't work completely ideally. It was kind of delayed, but I like the idea of it. They might as well do it, right? I mean, we see some of these soccer leagues doing it as well. If you're going to be playing in front of an empty stadium, I have no issue pumping in crowd noise. This isn't like the Atlanta Falcons when they had no fans and they didn't have a lot of boisterous fans, if you will, and they were fake pumping in crowd noise. It's not that. There's nobody in the stadium. I have no issue with that whatsoever. But anyway, Xander Bogaerts was on this very radio station today with OMF, and he was asked about the expectations for the team entering the season, and here's what he had to say.
Come on, man. If you look at our roster, the way it's built, obviously we're not kind of destined to be last place. Obviously, we are. We're a pretty talented team from top to bottom. Obviously, we can be much better in the pitching area. We're not loaded like the Tampa Bay Rays, but, I mean, there's not a lot of teams that are loaded like that, you know. So it's really tough to have everything. A team that has both, you know, that's obviously going to be an advantage for you as an organization. But we have guys that always step up. We have a couple guys that's been on the DL now, so hopefully we can get them back, like Eddie Rodriguez. Hopefully we can get him back in camp. We're missing a couple other key guys to our pitching staff. So, as I said, hopefully we can stay safe, and once we get those guys back, we'll get ready to roll.
All right, so that was Xander Bogaerts earlier today talking about the expectations for this team. He said we could be a little bit better in the pitching. I'd say so. Now, he did mention the fact that they got a lot of talent up and down, and that's one of the reasons I believe they actually have a chance to get into the postseason is because it's a shortened year. If this was actually a traditional baseball season, in my mind, I would give the Red Sox maybe a 5% chance at making the postseason. If it was 162 games, I'd give them maybe a 5% chance because they don't have the rotation to get through 162 games, especially considering that Sale had his Tommy John surgery during this coronavirus pandemic. And by the way, at least we finally got an answer on Chris Sale during the coronavirus pandemic. How long were we told that it wasn't a big issue? Oh, yeah, he's going to be fine. No big deal. He went down there, saw Dr. James Andrews last year. Remember we heard about this? Like, no structural damage, going to be good. No Tommy John. Oh, yeah, he needs Tommy John. Okay, so finally we got an answer on this. But the other thing about why I don't believe this team had a chance until now, this 60-game schedule, is the fact that when you look at it, it's the depth of the pitching staff. And even Xander Bogaerts referenced the fact that the pitching staff is not deep. And that's the major issue. But over 60 games, it's not going to be as big of a massive hole as it otherwise would be because a lot of teams are going to be in similar positions. And the reason I say that is this, is a lot of these pitchers are not going to be ready from the jump to go 7-8 innings or go 6-7 innings. You're going to need to do this opener thing. And the Red Sox are at least uniquely qualified for that because they brought in Chaim Bloom, who came over from Tampa Bay, that basically did that all of last year. Think about how many pitchers went down for the Tampa Bay Rays. But the reason I don't agree with Bogaerts that this team should not be underdogs is the fact that, yes, the pitching staff is not as big of a hole as it otherwise would be over 162 games, but it's still a massive hole. So right now, oh, by the way, I don't know if you've heard, Eduardo Rodriguez isn't with the team. He's got to get cleared to actually play. It's very unlikely that he's going to start on opening day for the Red Sox. So that's supposed to be your guy. Eduardo Rodriguez is supposed to be the front end of the rotation guy for the Red Sox this year. That's supposed to be your number one. And in my mind, if this team's going to have an opportunity to actually get into the postseason or compete to get to that level, they're going to basically need to win every time Eduardo Rodriguez is on the mound. They're also going to need Eduardo Rodriguez to go deep into games because after Eduardo Rodriguez, there is a significant dip-off with this rotation. So Bogaerts is referencing the fact that, yeah, they could have a better pitching staff. And he didn't say it that way. He just said, yeah, the pitching maybe could be better. He's just referencing the fact that, all right, maybe we don't have the best pitching staff, but we make up for that in the lineup. He wasn't trying to throw anybody under the bus. I want to clarify that. But look at the guys in the rotation after Eduardo Rodriguez, who really, Eduardo Rodriguez, if you look at it as well, last year was his first really good season. He's flashed potential for a number of years, but he could never really put it together. And then finally in the second half of last season is when we saw what Erod could be. So it's only a half a year of like really good Erod. We've seen flashes throughout his career, but last year he was consistent in the second half of the season. And that was the guy that you were going to have to rely on going into the season. And who knows how much this slows up his progress to begin the year. So then after that, you have Nathan Eovaldi. Okay. Nathan Eovaldi in his career has a 4.30 ERA. See, what has happened is we have gotten caught up here with what Nathan Eovaldi did in 2018, where he was so great in that postseason run. But Nathan Eovaldi, for the majority of his career, has been an inconsistent pitcher. Now, maybe this, Nathan Eovaldi, who we know throws 100 miles an hour when he wants to, maybe Nathan Eovaldi in a shortened season, when he doesn't have to get to the finish line with this 12 starts, maybe, if you will, probably what you'd get out of Nathan Eovaldi. Maybe he's just never going to wear down at all during the season, and he's just going to be incredible like he was in October. But that's a big fat if. But he's number two, not to mention the fact that he's somebody that's been injury-prone throughout his career. That goes without saying. Last year, he's dealing with that issue for the majority of the season. He finally comes back, and they couldn't figure out what to do with the guy. We were told he was going to come out of the bullpen, didn't work out. We were told he was going to be a starter. That didn't work out either. So last year, basically, the first year of his extension with the team was a lost season. So then after Nathan Eovaldi, who's a big question mark, who do you have in your rotation? Martin Perez. Okay, Martin Perez, in his career, he has a 4.72 ERA. His last two seasons, in 2018, he was with the Rangers. He had a 5.12 ERA. And then last year, he's with the Minnesota Twins. It got better. He had a, well, I should say, in 2018, he had a 6.22 ERA, and it got better to a 5.12 ERA last year. So that's a guy that you're expecting to eat up innings for you. But here's the problem. Is he going to be able to eat up innings if he's getting hit all over the ballpark? Because these numbers are not good. You're talking about last season, he's giving up 10 hits per nine innings. The season before that, 12.2 hits per nine innings. The season before that, 10.8 hits per nine innings. So is that a guy that's going to be able to give you five, six innings consistently? And that's all you can ask for out of a guy like Martin Perez, but I have my doubts about that. And then the other guy you're going to have to ask to start games is the dude that you were using as your opener last year in Ryan Weber. And Ryan Weber throws a fastball less than 90 miles an hour. And I know that, and I was talking to Brad Fall about this the other day. He had a great spring training 1.0. But I'm sorry, I'm going to question a guy that throws a fastball that is less than 90 miles an hour. That's kind of a question mark for me in terms of what this guy can do when he's on the mound in a major league game. He had that one great open last year, or whatever you want to call it. He had one good start, and then after that, everybody kind of realized, okay, guy's throwing about 87, 88. It turned into batting practice.
Gonski.
So when I hear Xander Bogaerts talk about the fact that, and look, he said all the right things. I mean, obviously right now this is his team. He's turned into the leader in that clubhouse. At least it would appear from the outside looking in. Quite frankly, I thought it became his team last year because he's the guy that said, hey, I want to do everything I possibly can to stay with the team. He told Scott Boras to go get him a contract. And he did. He got, a $200 million contract. And he had his best season after that. But it felt like he was so comfortable in that clubhouse after he signed that contract extension with the Red Sox that propelled him to have that outstanding season. And he's now the face of that Red Sox team. And then you have a guy like Devers who obviously had a great season as well. But Devers is what? He's a baby. He's like 22 years old. But when I just look at Bogaerts, who's the leader of that team, and he wants to say all the right things, the reality of the situation is this. If this Red Sox team has any chance at making it into the postseason, Bogaerts, Devers, and J.D. Martinez are going to all have to get hot at the same time, and they're going to have to be just carrying this team. Now, I would factor Benintendi into the mix as well. Apparently hit leadoff at the inter-squad scrimmage today. I don't know what the hell we're doing here. Did we not learn from last year? Benintendi is not a leadoff hitter. He was uncomfortable hitting leadoff last season. Put anybody else in the leadoff spot but Andrew Benintendi. And I believe Benintendi can have a bounce-back season. Last year, I'm not saying he was horrible, but we expected him to take a step forward, and he didn't. I just feel like he's significantly more comfortable hitting in the two-hole. That's like what he should be, a two-hole hitter. Either put him in the two-hole or hit him fifth or sixth in the lineup, but do not hit him first. I don't understand. Can we not learn from what this team did wrong last year? That's what we have to do. Acknowledge the fact that Benintendi's not a leadoff hitter, so don't put him in the damn leadoff spot. But it's those four guys I would look at. You'll see what you get with Verdugo, who is still a relatively young player. Obviously, big shoes to fill now that Mookie Betts is a member of the Dodgers. But I'm not going to depend on Verdugo as the guy that's going to have a great season his first year with the Red Sox. But you need those three guys for sure. Martinez, Bogaerts, and Devers to put up ridiculous numbers. And then when I look at the rotation, we'll see when Erod is ready to go, but he's basically going to have to win every start, and then you're going to need something wacky to happen. Because on paper right now, I would say the Red Sox are the third most talented team in this division. When you look at the Yankees are obviously the team that should win it, then the Tampa Bay Rays, because Tampa just always figures it out, and maybe the Red Sox are more talented, they have more high-end talent, but the Rays are a deeper team, and for whatever reason, they always figure out the pitching staff, they went to the playoffs a season ago. Then I would put the Red Sox in that mix, and then Toronto's not far behind the Red Sox. That's a young, talented team when you look at the fact that basically anybody that played in the major leagues, the Blue Jays have now drafted their kid. You got Guerrero Jr., you have Bichette, and you have Biggio. You got all those guys on that team. So that's a talented team. And then what really hurt the Red Sox in terms of their chances to actually make it into the postseason is the schedule is just an absolute monster. So the Red Sox really got screwed over. And I guess you can say the same thing about the National League East. But the AL East has to play the NL East in terms of these interleague games. So when you look at the Red Sox, their games are against the Nationals, who won the World Series. They're pretty good. Okay, the Braves, who made it into the postseason a year ago, although they did have Markakis end up dropping out. He'd already decided to opt out. But the Braves are still a good team that made it into the postseason a year ago. Then Philadelphia is going to be improved. They've added to their team, and they were better than their record indicated last year. And I know, Bill Parcells, you are what your record says. But in terms of talent, they were better than where they ended up last year. And even the Mets, like, the Mets aren't a great team, but they have some pretty good pitchers. So when you look at that, the only layup that the Red Sox have in terms of their schedule are their games against the Marlins and their games against the Orioles. That's it. The rest of that schedule, that's pretty devastating. When you're talking about the softer teams you're playing, are the Blue Jays and the Phillies and the Mets, like, those are the softer teams. Now, there's garbage teams like the Marlins and, of course, as I already mentioned, the Baltimore Orioles. They're a dumpster fire of an organization right now. But other than that, this is an incredibly tough break for the Red Sox. One thing the Red Sox will avoid, though, is the heat, the criticism, because it's only a 60-game season. People are just happy to get baseball back. Quite frankly, I'm happy to watch some baseball. I was watching those videos that were on Instagram and Twitter today in terms of stuff coming out of the ballpark. I mean, that's how much I want to see sports back. I've been watching the basketball tournament on ESPN because I just want to see something. And by the way, Joe Johnson's playing in that tournament. He should not be able to play in that tournament. It's a $1 million prize for the winning team. You got Joe Johnson, who played in the NBA as recently as what? Last year. But anyway, that's a complete digression, a conversation for a different time. We're all dying for baseball. We're excited for it. But I feel like the Red Sox almost get a hall pass this year, don't you? They almost get a free pass because it's a 60-game season. Chris Sale goes down before the year, has the Tommy John procedure, and you can just throw your hands in the air and say, ah, anything can happen in 60 games. And really the issue, which is the starting rotation, we would have already had multiple conversations about the issues with it in June, in July, and primarily in August again. But those conversations aren't really going to present themselves because there is only a three-month season. So we're not going to be as angry with the starting rotation, and we're not going to be as angry when this team is out of contention as we otherwise would be because you don't have that totality of the season. It's a shortened season that's only 60 games. When it's 162 games and your team's not good, there's a lot to complain about. But when it's only 60 games, you don't really have that ability, not to mention the fact that you're going to have a situation as well when the NBA playoffs are getting underway and the Stanley Cup playoffs are getting underway, which will take some of the heat off the Red Sox as well because you're going to have the Celtics and the Bruins trying to make postseason pushes. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. We will get to the media member that says the Celtics have 0% chance to win an NBA championship. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEI.
Now, Mutt at Night on WEI.
All right, Brian Barrett with you until 11 o'clock. If you want to join us, number to do so is 617-779-7937. All right, so Jarvis Landry is apparently calling out Tom Brady. Nothing to do with his on-the-field performance or anything along those lines. But this is what Jarvis Landry tweeted at Tom Brady today. This is Jarvis Juice Landry on Twitter, at God_Sun80. He says, at Tom Brady, the league needs your voice right now. He says the leagues. He means the league. The league needs your voice right now. We need our leaders on these calls with the NFL. Ask you as a fellow athlete, as a brother, as one of the most respected players of all time. We need to hear you. Hashtag salute. Hashtag unity. So, of course, right now, the NFL Players Association and the league itself are discussing a bunch of things for the upcoming season. Everything going on with the coronavirus pandemic. So they're discussing preseason and testing protocol for COVID-19. They made a rule today that apparently you can't swap postseason or postgame jerseys. Like, that's a thing in the NFL, which, whatever. I mean, you can just send it to the guy after if it's really that big of a deal. This is what I don't understand about this. So you can't exchange postgame uniforms after, which is, they adopted this from soccer. They do it in soccer all the time. And they adopted this to the NFL. They've done it over the past couple of years. I remember last year, like, oddly, Odell Beckham Jr. made Tom Brady cleats. Like, he wore cleats for Tom Brady in the game.
Goat skin cleats.
Yeah, goat skin cleats. What a loser, man. What the hell are you doing? You're wearing cleats for another man? Yeah, I don't understand that whatsoever. But anyway, if you're playing a football game, right, and you're sweating on guys, guys are bleeding, you're hitting each other on every play, but yet you can't exchange jerseys after the game. So this whole time where you guys were hitting each other during the game, you're exchanging fluids, you can pass the virus that way. But after the game, make sure you don't swap jerseys because that's when you're really vulnerable. I don't understand this. But anyway, so Jarvis Landry was then asked by somebody on Twitter, a fellow by the name of 2-6, his Twitter account, if you want to follow him. He said, this is pretty bleeped up. Why are you putting pressure on someone because you believe in something others may not? Shoving things down people's throats to say bleep they may or may not want to say will not get you or anyone else, anyone, kind of disgusting, TBH, to be honest. Okay, I always love when people say TBH, to be honest. I'd hope you're honest. So Jarvis Landry responds back to this random dude on Twitter. He said, this game has an effect on us, and it's not just one select group of people or a team. It's not just about calling Tom Brady out, but our union needs guys of his stature to be part of these conversations, just as they're part of the games that you love to watch on Sunday. Disgusting? LOL. So a couple of issues here with Jarvis Landry. So the players are trying to figure out how they're going to be able to do practices, and the Players Association doesn't want preseason games. So they've already scrapped two preseason games, right? I'm wondering this. Wouldn't you think that at this particular point in time, Brady would actually be against some of what the Players Association is asking for? So the Players Association is asking for less stuff, right? They're asking for less preseason, less practices, etc., right? So, like, if Brady is with this new team in Tampa Bay, don't you feel like Brady would want to be on the field more with his guys? Now, ordinarily, it wouldn't make a difference because Brady's been in New England for 20 years, but now he's in Tampa. So if he was in New England for 20 years and he's playing with these guys and he's got a rhythm with these guys, he's fine going into the season. We saw him in 18. He didn't go to OTAs. They still won the Super Bowl, right? But if Brady's now with his new team, he probably wants as much work with these guys as he possibly can. And I would wager that Brady wants to play a preseason game with the guys that he's with. So maybe some of the issues that the Players Association have, Brady's not for what they're arguing about. Now, the other thing I'd mention is this, as it pertains to Landry. This is kind of a low blow, wouldn't you say? Not a low blow, it's just cheap. Where you're calling somebody out on Twitter to help out in the negotiations? This just seems ridiculous to me that you have another player calling for Tom Brady on Twitter to say, hey, we need your help, Tom. Well, are you tweeting at a bunch of other star quarterbacks around the NFL? Are you tweeting at the rest of the guys that are big stars in the league? No, you're just singling out Tom Brady. In my mind, this is just completely reckless and it's completely unfair. I shouldn't say reckless. It's just unfair to put that type of pressure on Tom Brady. Because now if Tom Brady doesn't help out the Players Association and participate in these talks, well, then what happens? Then people are going to say, hey, they asked for Tom Brady's help and he did nothing. Come on. That's just unfair. I feel like that's completely unfair for Jarvis Landry to put that type of pressure on Tom Brady to participate in the talks. Remember, this is the same Tom Brady that just went against the medical director of the PA's advice. Remember, the medical director of the PA recently said, hey, you shouldn't have these group workouts. And Tom Brady had the group workout and he posted the quote from FDR. So I don't think Tom Brady's the guy right now that wants to be helping out with these discussions. So I don't know why Jarvis Landry is going to put that on his Twitter account. Worry about yourself, man. There's enough to worry about, okay? Worry about your own team. Worry about the Browns. I understand you're trying to help out with everything going on with the Players Association, but calling Tom Brady out on social media, I don't agree with that whatsoever. Call him up or DM him. DM him and see what Tom Brady has to say. Actually try to have a conversation with the guy. Maybe there's a reason that Tom Brady doesn't want to participate in these conversations with the NFL. Did you factor that in? Maybe hit him up on Twitter in terms of a DM rather than just tweeting directly at the guy. And then maybe you can get an answer out of Tom Brady. All right? Jeez. Now, look, I understand that I'm the one that said that Belichick made the right decision for letting Tom Brady walk. I stand by that. But I just feel like this week, man, people are coming at Tom Brady left and right. And it's uncalled for. It really is. You can't just go on your social media account and say, hey, Tom, come help us. Come save us. Come on. The other guy that pissed me off this week as it pertains to Tom Brady is Randy Moss. Randy Moss is on Get Up yesterday, and he's doing an interview with Mike Greenberg. And Mike Greenberg asked him, hey, how many touchdown passes or how many touchdown receptions would you have had if you played with Pat Mahomes? And you know,
I'm saying 30 touchdowns to set the mark and really set it at a high level. And I'm not joking by saying that. Because when you look at what he's able to do, you got guys streaking down the field. They just brought in the Sinclair, the running back from the national champion LSU Tigers. So this offense is going to get better. They're going to be able to put up numbers. Hey, last week I jokingly said that it was the greatest show on turf. I didn't know I was a part of that, and I really look at the Kansas City Chiefs, Greeny, of being able to come close to breaking that breaking those offensive records.
Okay, here's the issue I have with Randy Moss. He played with the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. No disputing that, right? Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. His immediate reaction when he's asked, hey, how many touchdown grabs would you have with Pat Mahomes? He says 30. Well, Randy Moss has the record. 23 is the record. He has the most touchdown receptions in the history of a season. And he's on GetUp saying, hey, if I play with this Mahomes guy, I'd have 30. And I know Randy Moss doesn't mean it to come across that way, but it comes across that way. He owes Tom Brady and Bill Belichick a lot. Randy Moss was in Oakland, and he was quitting on his football team. He wasn't running out routes when they were having running plays. He's just standing there at the line of scrimmage, okay? And he's got the audacity to say, yeah, I'd probably have 30 if I played with Pat Mahomes. Because the way that comes across to me is, yeah, if only I played with that Mahomes guy, think about what I could have done. Oh, I'm sorry, Randy. It wasn't good enough for you to play with the greatest quarterback in the history of the league. And really, was it as if Tom Brady was missing throws to you where you could have had more touchdowns? You were targeted like crazy that year. I don't know what the hell Randy Moss is talking about where he said, yeah, I could have had 30 touchdown grabs with Pat Mahomes. And he also said last week that this offense is finally going to be fun now that Cam Newton's here and Tom Brady's out of the equation. And that, to me, is something that rubs me the wrong way as well. See, it's one thing for us as fans, right? I'm very interested to see what the offense looks like with McDaniels and now that Jed Fish is here and Bill Belichick to design an offense around Cam Newton. It's one thing for us to say that as fans. We're interested to see what it looks like. But I'm also not going to pretend like I didn't have fun for 15 to 18 years of watching Tom Brady in this offense. It was a lot of fun watching Tom Brady play football over the years. 07 was some of the most fun I've ever had watching football when Brady threw 50 touchdowns and Randy Moss caught 23 of them. Like, that was insanely fun to watch the Patriots at that particular point in time. Heck, when Gronk came into the NFL and he took the league by storm, and what, in his second or third year, he set the record for the most touchdown receptions for a tight end in NFL history. I was all in on that. That was fun to watch. How about 2017 when Tom Brady won the MVP? I like that. How about the comeback against the Atlanta Falcons? I like that. So for the majority of Tom Brady's time here, the offense was extremely fun to watch. Extremely fun to watch. So I don't know what Randy Moss is talking about where he says, hey, the offense is finally going to be fun. Did you not have fun in 07? Come on, Randy. See, because I don't think Randy means these things. But when you're in the media, you have to realize how things are going to come across. When you played with Tom Brady and you say, hey, if I play with Mahomes, I actually would have had 30 touchdown passes. That doesn't make you look good. That makes you look ungrateful for Tom Brady, who saved your career. Remember, when Randy Moss was in Oakland, only two teams wanted him. The Packers, because Brett Favre was pushing for him, and the New England Patriots. And the asking price was only a fourth round pick. That's where Randy Moss's value was at that particular point in time, because everybody thought he was a malcontent and he wasn't going to be able to save his career. And the Patriots saved his career.
I'm saying 30, Greeny.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, 30. He would not have caught 30, by the way, with Pat Mahomes. Come on, 30 touchdown grabs? I mean, that's ridiculous.
He had 160 targets in 07.
Well, I mean, if they only threw it to him 180 times, Nick, he would have had 30 touchdowns. I don't know what you're talking about. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Tony in Dorchester. Tony, what's up, man?
Hello.
Tony.
I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, what's going on, man?
I just want to just weigh in on Cam Newton. You know, I always call in on baseball, but listening to you, you know, I'm getting excited about Cam. You know, I know he's been a hothead here through his career, but I think he has a chip on his shoulder, man. He's got something to prove, and I think he's going to go all out. But here's my thing. I think it's not just because I think that, but I think there's so many NFL ballers that also agree with me that just believe that he's got so much in the tank to give. And he's so excited about playing for the Pats. He has to beat out in the preseason if we do and all this happens. But to me, here's what I think. I think he's going to probably end up having a good year and make the postseason with the Pats. I can't agree with other Pats fans when they say that he's going to have a better year than TB12. That's a negative on that. That's where I draw the line. But I'm telling you, they'll make the postseason. I always said Belichick was a genius. I always said that for years. I'm going to stick with it, and he will continue being that in my book. But it's postseason action for the Pats here, and he'll beat out everybody. And I had Hoyer anyways here. I know Mutt's going to get pissed off here because I said that at the beginning. But anyways, have a good night, brother.
But you said what at the beginning? Tony, I'm confused. What did you say at the beginning?
I guess he picked Hoyer to start.
So Mutt's going to be pissing him for picking Hoyer to start?
I guess so.
Well, I'll have to ask Mutt next time I see him. I'll probably run into him at some point next week. I'll have to ask Mutt if he's going to be mad at Tony for picking Hoyer to be the starting quarterback of the Patriots. I don't know why anybody would pick Hoyer. If Cam Newton was never here, then you would have to go with Stidham. Man, how about Stidham?
And then Brian Lewerke, and then Jamar Smith, and then Brian Hoyer.
No, the Edelman, then Hoyer. Edelman in a, basically, you're just going to run the ball with Edelman. But the other thing I would mention is this, is Jarrett Stidham, he mentions, you know, how excited he is for Cam Newton. I'm glad I got him excited for Cam Newton. Think about how Jarrett Stidham feels right now, man. You're in New England. You're the quarterback of the New England Patriots, and you're sitting there in free agency, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, they didn't go after anybody. All they brought in was Hoyer, and I beat that guy out last year. Rivers went to the Colts. The Cowboys traded for Dalton. We didn't kick the tires on Jameis Winston. I'm good here, man. Well, I made it through the first round of this. And then you get to the NFL draft, and no Jalen Hurts. They obviously didn't like Jordan Love, who they could have had if they wanted him in the first round. I didn't really like him either, so I'm not mad about that. I'm just saying. Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm, all these guys, they go off the board, and the Patriots are not interested in any of them. So if you're Jarrett Stidham, you made it through free agency, you made it through the draft, you think it's over. And then all of a sudden, at the end of June, Cam Newton comes to town. Oh, man. He's just got to be steaming, fuming right now. And it's not as if the Patriots owed him the starting job. I mean, he hadn't done much. He's a fourth-round pick. It's not as if, oh, yeah, I can't believe the Patriots did this to Jarrett Stidham. But, man, I kind of feel a little bit bad for Jarrett Stidham. Now, obviously, I'm all in with the quarterback now. I can't wait to watch Cam Newton play. But, man, Jarrett Stidham. Oh, what a tough week it's been for Jarrett Stidham. 617-779-7937, the number. A lot more to get into. We will get into the one media member that says the Celtics have 0% chance at winning an NBA championship. We'll do that in just a little bit here on WEI.
Now, Mutt at Night on WEI.
Brian Barrett in for Mutt tonight. The number is 617-779-7937. So the Eagles have officially announced that they've penalized DeSean Jackson for conduct detrimental to the team. I don't know what that means. They penalized him, but they don't tell you what they did. They didn't tell you if they suspended him. They didn't tell you if they fined him. They didn't say anything except that they've penalized DeSean Jackson. The Eagles said this has been a difficult and emotional week for our community and organization. The Eagles do not tolerate hate towards any individual or group. We believe in respect and equality for all races, ethnicities, and faiths. We as an organization want to help be an instrument for positive change. I give Julian Edelman credit for that video he posted yesterday where he asked DeSean Jackson, hey, come to D.C., we'll go to the Holocaust Museum, and we'll have these tough conversations. So I give Julian Edelman a ton of credit for actually reaching out to the guy and basically giving him a life raft, because at this point in time, what DeSean Jackson said was incredibly offensive. And for Julian Edelman, who is Jewish, to say, hey, let's go to the Holocaust Museum together, I give him a ton of credit. But getting back to the original thing with DeSean Jackson, I don't know what the hell he thought he was trying to accomplish. See, here's the issue for DeSean Jackson. Anytime you're going to try to put something on your social media and you're, first of all, he wasn't quoting Hitler, but he thought he was quoting Hitler. Right when you think you're quoting Hitler, stop. Stop. Don't do it. How dumb can you be? I don't understand it whatsoever. So basically, and the gist of what was in the quote was that Jews are trying for world domination, okay, and they were going to extort America. I have no idea what the hell he was talking about. So then he issued an apology where he said, I want to apologize to the Jewish community, Jeffrey Lurie, Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, the Eagles organization, and our fans for the insensitive and ill-informed posts that I shared on my social media. My intention was to uplift, unite, and encourage our culture with positivity and light. So he wanted to uplift, unite, and encourage our culture. We need a lot more from this guy. I don't know how you're trying to uplift a community when you're quoting Hitler. You're quoting Hitler and you thought that was going to uplift a community. I have to think that DeSean Jackson is just, maybe he doesn't understand what the Holocaust was, and maybe he doesn't understand who Hitler is. That's the only rational explanation for what he put on his social media account. How else would you explain this? You quoted Hitler, or at least you thought you were quoting Hitler, but it wasn't Hitler. But nonetheless, you thought you were quoting Hitler. So that's like the only explanation for this. It doesn't make any sense. The guy comes across as a complete buffoon as well when he's apologizing, when he says, I was trying to uplift, unite, and encourage. How did you think a quote from Hitler was going to uplift anybody?
You're a freaking idiot.
617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Mike in North Providence. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, you know, when it comes to quoting Hitler, I mean, it's okay when you're trying to, like, you know, shed some light as far as, like, somebody saying something like Hitler was saying, and saying, well, Hitler used to say these things. But apart from that,
yeah,
there's not a lot to be gleaned from it. And you certainly should be saying this is a guy who has anything of worthwhile advice to be giving
yeah.
the world.
And you know, Mike, it's a bunch of gibberish that he's putting out there. It's a bunch of stuff like the Jews are trying to extort America and they're trying for world domination. And he thought that was going to uplift people. I don't know what the hell he was trying to accomplish.
Well, Louis Farrakhan says a lot of that sort of stuff.
And yeah, and you're right. That's where he got it from. And he's referred to Jewish people as termites. So,
yeah. And with regards to you talking about the Celtics, right? I think the Celtics, I think they're going to get off to a pretty good fast start here as far as like that writer saying that they have no chance to win a title. I disagree. A lot of teams are going to be like really disorganized right now coming back. And Brad's kind of run a college style system. Our young players like, you know, Tatum and Brown and Smart are self-starters who are going to be really prepared. And they're just kind of a together group and they're going to be fully healthy, or at least they should be fully healthy. So I think they have as good a chance as anybody of really hitting the ground running, because some teams are just not going to be right. And I wouldn't be surprised if you get early knockouts in the playoffs, especially the mid-tier teams, fully based upon whether the readiness of the teams to play after being off this long.
Yeah, Mike, here's my concern. So first of all, I like the fact that now that Oladipo's not playing, the Celtics are most likely going to play the Pacers after this 8-game restart, because Philly, they have the same record as Indiana, so they should jump them in the standings. And I believe Indiana's going to be an easy first-round matchup for the Celtics. Then you play Toronto, who's a pretty good team, but I believe the Celtics are more talented, and I believe that the top-end talent of the Celtics is better than the top-end talent of the Raptors. But my one concern about this is the whole Hayward situation, because in my mind, he's your second-best facilitator on the team. He's averaging north of 4 assists per game. And when you play a team like the Bucks, you know you have to cover him when he's in the corner because he can shoot, so he does help you space the floor. And the situation where he has to go, and I'm not criticizing for this. I have no issue with it whatsoever that he's going back for the birth of his child. But it's the logistics of it. So he leaves, and then basically when he comes back to the bubble, he's going to have to quarantine for 4 days. So if you're missing Hayward against, say, the Bucks in a conference finals, that could really hurt the Celtics, and that's like the most concerning thing I have about the Celtics entering this thing.
Well, from my point of view here, I'm not too wound up about it, because honestly, if anything, if this team has had a problem, and it's a weird problem to have, but it is a problem, is that they generally tend to play better when it's 3 of the 4 stars out there as opposed to all 4 of the stars.
Because that is fair.
It's almost, yeah, the logic of how the chemistry works on the court, it just shakes itself out. So when Gordon missed a lot of time, that's when Jaylen Brown really broke out, you know? That's when, like, because it was just access to the ball. There's only one ball. Everyone can't have it.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
And Mike, to your point, when Kemba went down, that's when Tatum emerged as a borderline superstar, at least on the verge of becoming that.
Exactly, and a lot of it is just you don't have to share the ball with these other guys. It's nothing personal. It doesn't make Gordon a bad player. It's just, there's a certain sort of logic to how a basketball team plays, and you can't have everybody having the ball. And unfortunately, it's almost like we have too many guys that need it even now. And last year we saw it was a total nightmare. And with a quick note on the Pats, I'm just looking forward to watching this offense be radically different than what we've seen for the last 20 years. Yeah. I don't know how good it'll be, but it's going to be something like what, you know, the Baltimore Ravens were running last year. And it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Mike, appreciate the call. Good hearing from him. Haven't heard from Mike in a while. The number is 617-779-7937. So to the Celtics point, I'm optimistic about this team. I'm not with all these members of the media. Now, of course, Nick Wright thinks they have 0% chance of winning an NBA championship. I'm not at that level. But I'm not as high as the Jalen Roses of the world, the Richard Jeffersons, who think the Celtics are coming out of the Eastern Conference. And it's not as if I have a ton of issues with the Celtics as a team. It's just I look at what Milwaukee has right now, and I know the Bucks lost to the Raptors last year, but that Raptors team was really damn good, one of the best defensive teams we saw in the last decade. So it's more about the Bucks than it is about the Celtics. Interesting thing Mike brings up about the Hayward point, that this team is usually better when three of the four stars are playing. And there is some truth to that. The one thing about Hayward, though, in terms of losing him, I just feel like the Celtics will miss his creation if he's not there. And when you look at the Bucks, you're going to need all the shooters you can possibly have. You're going to need all hands on deck. So Hayward's a guy that can space the floor. And I just worry about where the minutes go. Like if Ogilvy's on the floor and he's not able to hit threes, well, then that really hurts your spacing in a series against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Patriots thing, in terms of being excited to see the offense, I'm in the same boat. It's almost as if you have to make sure every time that you mentioned the football, you got to always mention, well, hey, Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. And I love Brady. You have to mention that like every time, which I feel like at this point in time, Brady is where Brady wants to be. He wants to be with a different organization right now. He wants to play in a system like he did a couple of years ago where he can air the ball all over the field. And now we have a situation in New England where we've seen something that, or we're about to see something that we've never seen before. I'm excited for it. And quite frankly, Cam Newton is better equipped with this personnel than Tom Brady would have been. We saw Tom Brady with this personnel last year. He wasn't happy. He was mopey. And they weren't top-tier receivers where Brady could throw the ball all over the field. It wasn't going to work. So with Cam Newton, his ability to run the football gives this team a higher ceiling, an even higher ceiling, than it would have had with a 43-year-old Tom Brady. And quite frankly, when I look at Brady and his chances in Tampa, I don't think they're very high. I do not see him and Bruce Arians being able to mold their offenses together like Arians keeps saying the two sides are going to do. I just don't see that being the case. Arians' system is no risk it, no biscuit. They want to throw the ball down the field. Brady's death by a million paper cuts. I just don't see a way that they mold those pieces together perfectly. And if you're not throwing the ball down the field to Godwin and Evans, you're not taking advantage of their strengths. Godwin had the most catches over 20 yards last year, and Evans averaged north of 15 yards per reception. So these are down the field guys. And at this point in time, I don't believe Brady's going to be able to do that for an entire season without breaking down. We saw it last year. He ends up with the elbow tendonitis. You go play for Bruce Arians, you're going to throw the ball even more, and you're going to be throwing it down the field even more. You don't think Brady's going to have issues from a health perspective there? Not to mention the fact that one of the things Arians asks his quarterbacks to do is hang in the pocket. That means that Brady's going to be taking more hits. Is Brady going to be able to hold up over a 16-game season, taking more hits at the age of 43? I don't see that being the case whatsoever. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 11 o'clock if you want to join us. I will get to the one media member that thinks the Celtics have no chance. What do you think the Celtics' chances are when this restart officially gets underway? 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you on WEA.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.